Like when the Many Faces of Eve came out, that book. I believe that a lot of multiple personality disorder and some of those things that came out were the result of well-meaning therapists helping to fragment that individual. So the individual says, "Well, there's a part of me that gets angry at home in the evening." And they say, "Okay, let's call that part Bob." Yeah? Yikes. What the therapist was doing in that case was placing boundary conditions on that. Right? So what we know from our, and this is especially in our school of thought in NLP, there are still some schools of thought in NLP where they actually create parts, like a training part that takes over when somebody becomes a trainer, the father part. So they'll create parts for individual roles. But from our perspective, it's best to create wholeness. Wholeness is better than fragmentation. So we look to create wholeness within the individual. We still do parts integrations because that's important to integrate those parts to end up in wholeness. But we do say that wholeness is better. And then from our perspective also, it's better for people to have access to all those parts across across every context of their life. Like it might be important in the context of being a good father to have access to the part of you that might be a trainer or might be a teacher. Yeah, so it'd be important to have those. So we do say that all procedures should increase wholeness. Yeah. What else? What's another one? Another favorite presupposition.
I like the most important
information about a person is that person's behavior. Absolutely. So we can listen to what somebody says, especially in change work. Now this becomes incredibly important when we're doing change work, because people will say one thing. But we know from communication that the meaning of the communication is not necessarily the words. Words carry how much of the meaning? 7%. Tonality carries how much? 38%. Physiology carries how much? 55%. Right? That's according to a lot of the studies that were done, especially out of the University of Pennsylvania in the 70s, and continue today. So the meaning of the communication has much more to do with the physiology or the behavior. In fact, my current thought is that behavior physiology is more than just 55%. That's my current thought. Because I think that when they did the original studies, like kinesics and context was one big study that they did, and the problem that I see inherent in that study, and there's not a problem, just the challenge in terms of really defining what the meaning of the physiology is that it was in the context of an interpersonal communication between two people sitting there like face-to-face, right? But when we look at behavior, they say that actions speak louder than what? Words. So our actions carry a lot of meaning. Because we could be saying one thing and our actions are saying something totally different, in which case the actions speak much more than the 55%. So what I'll do is I'll listen to what a client says if I'm working with a client, and I'll watch their behavior more. I'll be more in tune to what their behavior is. And I'll look at that behavior and I'll go, huh, what's the meaning of that behavior? What's the meaning of the behavior that they're doing? So I'll constantly be watching that. What's the next one? What's another one that you find as being a favorite?
The law of requisite variety.
The law of requisite variety. Law of requisite variety comes to us from thermodynamics. And the law of requisite variety simply says that the person or persons with the most flexibility of behavior will end up controlling the system. What that means is that the more that we increase our behavioral flexibility, the more able we will be to control the system. So the question becomes, who's more flexible? In a client situation, who's more flexible, the client or the therapist? Hopefully the therapist, right? But there are clients that are more flexible oftentimes with certain therapists, and therefore they get the results that they get, right? So we want to look at that and say, how can we increase our behavioral flexibility? Now, by the way, the co-founders of NLP had a lot of behavioral flexibility. I've told some of you the story of the day when Richard Bandler was being taken on a tour of a mental hospital, and they walked past the patients that were, there was one patient in particular that was comatose, and he was inside the room. And the psychologists that were taking Richard around to look at the various patients and giving them the tour, they said, shh, we got to be quiet. Because here we're, you know, there's, I'm sorry, not comatose, catatonic. He says, there's a catatonic patient in there. And so Richard Bandler thought, huh, when the patients have more behavioral flexibility than the doctors, then we're in trouble. So he walks in. Now this man hadn't moved in years, hadn't talked to anybody, hadn't moved, just kind of sitting there, catatonic. Right? Richard Bandler walks up to him and he goes like this. And he stomps on his foot. Guy jumps up. He says, "Ow! What'd you do that for?" Now, here's somebody who hadn't moved in ages, right? So this is behavioral flexibility. Now, Richard's a little crazy, too, but he has ultimate behavioral flexibility. There's other stories, yeah, about Richard that I don't know that I'll tell at this point. But he's had ultimate behavioral flexibility. Now, what's interesting is there's a whole form of therapy, actually, that came out of this, and many people in NLP have gone on to study this. Jay Haley is the father of provocative therapy. In fact, you may want to get his book, Provocative Therapy. And one of the things that he says is, like, he was once asked, how do you get people to do the crazy things that you do in therapy? Because he'll do crazy things. He's got ultimate behavioral flexibility. He says, how do you get the patients and your clients to do all these crazy things? He said, crazy? He said, shoot, if somebody will sit on a couch for 7 years while somebody else sits behind him going, and pay him $100 an hour, he says, that's crazy. You'll get him to do anything. So, interestingly enough, kind of funny. No knock against therapy, by the way. I admire all forms of change, all forms of therapy. I think everything has its time and its place. Everything has its time and its place. Yeah. But the person with the most behavioral flexibility will control the system. So that means, by the way, that's why I think it's important to increase our communication skills. Because the person who has the most in terms of communication skills will end up controlling the system as well, from my perspective. Yeah. What's another favorite presupposition? People have all the resources that they need to succeed inside of them. Yeah, absolutely. Now the way Milton Erickson describes it is this. He said that most people, we have a warehouse of resources inside of us. We have a huge warehouse of resources. Every resource we'd ever need to succeed. But most people go looking into that warehouse with a little teeny pen light. Right? So the question is, how do we turn on the floodlights in the warehouse to tap into all those resources? And that's part of what today, and that's part of what this entire training is about turning on the floodlights to tap into all of those resources that we have inside of us. So we're no longer looking in that warehouse with the pen light. And we do have all the resources that we need to succeed inside of us, just sometimes we haven't connected with those resources or we haven't found them. Some of the power of the anchoring techniques that we use in NLP is the ability to tap into some of those resources. Because we've all had times where we felt disempowered, but we've also all had those times where we felt totally empowered. We felt totally loved or totally confident or totally powerful. So the question is, how do we tap into those resources at any time that we choose? Or how do we assist other people to do the same?